I'm sure Nestor Gomez was listening to my ramble about the first time I met him, but I first met him, as I said, 10 years ago when he's told me he was a writer, wanted to be a writer, gave me one of his stories. I read his story. I told him it was great. And he's since become not only a award-winning, prize-winning moth storyteller in other places. Last year he published his first book, and because it was last year and it was COVID clampdown, it didn't get the notice that it deserved. I think it's a great book. It is titled Your Driver Has Arrived, and it's my pleasure to welcome Nestor Gomez to the show. Nestor, how are you?
Yes, fine. Thank you very much for having me.
Was it really 10 years ago that you first gave me that story, or was it longer?
No, right? It seems like only yesterday.
You're right. You know, one of the great things, you came here from war-torn Guatemala with two brothers and a sister. You were 15 years old, and you did not speak English. And as you told me at the time, you did not really speak anything, did you?
Yeah, at the time when I came to the United States, I really didn't have a voice. I couldn't speak because I had a useless daughter.
Yeah.
I was undocumented, and I didn't know any English. So I really didn't have a voice at all.
You did in a sense, though. Don't you think, Nestor, have a voice because you wrote stories? You taught yourself English by watching TV, which is always a strange way to learn the language. But then you've always been writing because it was an outlet for you to communicate, right?
Yes, I used to write a lot of poetry because I couldn't talk. I still stuttered a little bit from time to time, but obviously not as much as I did when I'm still little because I'm only 5 feet tall. When I was younger.
yes, but you're a published author, so you're big now to me. That you were certainly then, you were afraid to get up in public, where you wound up. You did, you know, you kept your writing buried in a drawer, and you let a few people read it, didn't you?
Yes, I showed my poems to a few of my selected friends when I was in school, in high school. And then after I got out of high school and I started working, because I got married right after high school, I just kept my poetry to myself and just kept it on one of the drawers, you know, where I keep my clothes, basically. just hidden from anyone. And it wasn't until I started telling stories at the mall that I actually decided to show my writing to people.
Now, when you first went to see The Moth, which is a sort of spoken word performance, and also Mark Smith's venerable and empowering poetry slam, when you heard other people read, did that start to give you a little courage, Nestor?
Yes, I went to a moth slam because I actually went to a poetry slam to tell some of my poems that I had been reading my whole life.
Yeah.
But my poetry was in Spanish and the poem slam was in English, so I chickened out from that event. But my girlfriend and I, we found a flyer for The Moth. It was advertising a grand slam. And we got tickets for that event, and I didn't even know what storytelling was.
Right,
at
sure.
That time.
Sure.
So I went to the Moth Grand Slam and I saw some amazing storytellers. I saw Archie R. Jenjum, who's an amazing storyteller here in Chicago. And he was telling a story about his parents, who are immigrants, and how he was raised in a different way that people that are born here are raised, because, well, he's born here, but his parents are immigrants. So,
Right.
His story really resonated with me, and I remember telling my girlfriend at the time, like, I want to do that. And he was the one that started the idea that I could tell stories at the Moth events.
Now, your girlfriend at the time became your wife, right? Your third wife.
Yes, I was lucky enough that she didn't get tired of me. And we've been married for about 4 years now.
Wow, that's great. That's great. That's the other worry you had is you worried that the audience might not understand anything about Guatemala, right? I mean, you're sort of trans—
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. Yes, as an immigrant, I was worried that, first of all, the people were not going to relate to my stories because I'm an immigrant, and most of the people were born here, or at least that's what I was thinking at the time.
Yeah.
And that people would not understand me because of my sexy Latino accent.
Mm-hmm.
And I was worried about that, but then I also heard one of the stories by Lily B, who's another amazing storyteller here in Chicago. She was telling a story on the Mall Radio Hour about Humble Park and her abuela and eating mangoes. And when I heard her, I was like, oh, she did it. Archie did it. I can do this.
That's so great. It so empowered you. We got to take a little commercial break, and I'll come back and talk to Nestor Gomez about his... Do you think it's cool to have a published book, Nestor? You must.
I cannot believe it. It's been one of my dreams since I was a kid.
I'm going
to read stories and just imagine myself actually publishing a book. So
yeah. At the beginning of the book, is sort of as a dedication, Nestor writes, "When I first arrived in Chicago from Guatemala..." I don't have your accent, Nestor, so I can't do it as well as you do. "When I first arrived in Chicago from Guatemala in the mid-1980s, I was undocumented, I stuttered, and I didn't know the English language. I didn't have a voice. Today, I am a U.S. citizen, I am a storyteller, and I speak English with a very sexy Latino accent, and I have found my voice. Therefore, I want to dedicate this book to all my fellow immigrants and to all those who feel as if they don't have a voice." That, too, is very inspirational. We'll be back in a couple minutes with Nestor Gomez. I'm back with Nestor Gomez. We are in the process of celebrating the publication of his first book, Your Driver Has Arrived, Ride-Sharing Stories by Nestor the Boss Gomez. You know, Nestor, I've known you for such a long time. I don't know, why do they call you the boss?
The Boss Gomez is a nickname that came out after I told a story. And I think it was actually a story about my first Uber driving story that I told at the mall. The producer at the time, Tyler Green, really loved the story. And he told me, like, "You're the boss. You're the boss. You're really telling a lot of stories." But to me, the boss doesn't mean like I'm the best. So I'm like, you know, like,
sure.
Like,
right.
A great storyteller. To me, when you say boss, it sounds a lot like, in Spanish, voice, which is boss, which is to have a voice.
To have a voice.
And to be able to be the voice of the immigration experience.
Wow.
So,
I remember,
it has a double meaning to me.
I remember seeing you do somewhere a story about being an Uber driver. And this book, Your Driver Has Arrived, is a gathering of stories over... How long did you drive, Nestor?
Oh, I drove for several years.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to get started driving for Uber when it first started, like almost at the beginning of it. And back then it was really good because there weren't that many drivers on the road, and a company was trying to get people to sign up.
Right.
For signing up, they were giving you $500 bonus.
Wow.
So, yes. So
well.
At the time, I was able to make a good amount of money and to get a bunch of stories and experiences.
You didn't go into this. I mean, I'm sure you went into the Uber ride-sharing thing because there was a way to make money. You were working another job. You've always worked like three jobs, haven't you?
Yes. My mother gave me the bad example of working too hard. My mother works, like, if you think I work hard, my mom works. When she was able to work, she worked twice as hard as I ever done.
Wow.
So at the time when I was driving for Uber, I was doing a full-time 40-hour job, and I was driving like almost 40 hours on the weekends for Uber. I had a lot of debt. I had like about $10,000 credit card debt, and I was like really broke.
Yeah.
So I was tired of being broke, and I decided like I had to work my ass off in order to pay off my debt.
You know, one of the other things that appealed to you, and it's part of the book, you know, the stories in the book, it's a very interesting thing to me, Nestor, that you know better than I do as a storyteller, that there are some things that work on stage and there are some things that work on the page. Did you have to change much in translating your storytelling from live to page?
We try to keep the stories as close to the performing story as possible.
Uh-huh.
But there were certain things that we had to change. there were a couple of stories where I interact with the audience as I'm telling the story,
sure.
and we have to
right.
take those little things off. But we try to keep it as possible or as close to like the story was performed as possible.
You were excited about, and you translate, there is excitement in this book. Your drivers arrive. There are funny parts. There's some sort of sad parts. You didn't like driving drunk people, that's for sure, did you?
Yes. Not only because of the accident that could happen, that they could actually throw up on your car or anything, but you never know what to expect with drunk people. You know, you never know how they're going to react or how the situation is going to evolve. So you have to be really careful about those things.
Generally, you weren't trying, I don't think, you tell me I'm wrong, but you weren't trying to mine stories from this. It was just everything in your life. Once you started telling stories, everything in your life became a potential story, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I was just trying to make money because I had,
two jobs.
A lot of financial problems at the time. I actually was going to, like, the first time that I told a story about an Uber driving story, I had another story ready to tell at a mod slam. And
right.
I told a story to my wife, and she was like, yeah, maybe you don't tell a story tonight. She didn't like the story that I was going to tell. So I told her, like, I have this thing that happened to me while I was driving for Uber, and I kind of, like, told her, like, a two-minute version of it, and she's like, oh, that's even better.
Yeah.
You should tell that.
Wow.
So that's how I started telling stories for Uber, because, I would just, it just happened.
You also got to know the city. I mean, that's, you're right in here. One of the best things about driving around is that I got to know the city very well. You thought you knew the city before, didn't you?
Yes. I like, everybody that's been in Chicago for, you know, a certain amount of years, we think that we know the city. But it's not until you start driving people to, you know, to their destination, and they start telling you special ways to go about it, or special shortcuts to take, or you go to neighborhoods that you've never really been to before.
Right.
You just went to, like, the big places in the neighborhood that you really didn't go and visit the neighborhood as we all should.
Well, one of the things you learned, I think you learned a lot of lessons, not just about streets, but here you write, in the end, I was able to realize that although there are some haters out there, for each of them, there are 3 or maybe even 10 or maybe even more open-minded people that are trying to make not only America, but the whole world a better place. You believe that in your heart, don't you?
We all have to believe that, because if we just got to, you know, if we just concentrate on the people that are trying to if we only concentrate on the haters, this is going to be a very dark view of the world. We have to pay more attention to the people that are trying to make this world a better world for everybody. And there's plenty of people out there doing that.
Yeah, and you would meet them, too. I think this was a real eye-opening experience for you. Did you get a sense of the American dream? I think the American dream is still alive in you. I think you're a great example of the American dream, don't you?
I hope so. I hope that the American dream is no longer about buying a house and making money, but it's actually finding a way to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what means to me the American dream. It's not so much about being able to buy a house and making big financially, you know.
Yeah.
It's being able to pursue happiness, to find what makes you happy.
Yeah, I think that's such a lovely, lovely feeling. How old are your kids now?
Well, my kids are close to their 30s. Because I had my kids when I was really
you
young.
Sure did.
So, yeah, my
kids were very young.
Too young.
Do you miss it at all? Do you miss driving?
I actually considered driving for Uber again. Like a couple of days ago, a friend of mine posted something on Facebook about how she couldn't find a driver. She's like, why is it taking so long? I've been waiting 20 minutes. And I immediately was like, maybe I should get back on the road.
It's not easy. It's not easy being a driver, being a ride-sharing
driver. No, it's not easy at all.
How did, and I'm going to keep you on all the way till about 1:45, Mr. Gomez, how did the book come to be? Did Jerry Brennan at Tortoise Books see you and say, hey, this would be a great book? How did it happen?
We met at an event when some of the people that have published books with him were reading the stories.
Yeah.
And I was telling a story, and we had a conversation, and we started a conversation about immigration stories, and from immigration stories went to family stories. And all of a sudden I said, like, you know what, I also have a bunch of ride-sharing stories. I actually did a solo show with all my ride-sharing stories at Filero Solo a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So I had already all the stories together on a solo show, but I had never published anything, so that's how it came about.
How was the experience? What was it like to publish a book? I mean, I think it, on one level, it's thrilling. On another level, it can be really frustrating. You know, getting the nice, you got some really nice jacket quotes on here. I'm surprised I'm not on here, but you've got, you know, Amy Dickinson writing about you. How do you know Amy?
From the mod. She used to host a mod event.
Yeah.
Yes. So I was lucky enough to meet her, and we keep in touch. So when we started the idea of publishing the book, we contacted a couple of the people. I think that we did send you an email, but you know how those emails get lost in the, you know.
Oh, my God, I get too many of them. I get too many of them, because exactly. I happily would have said something here. You write one of the other things, before we take another break, I'm going to you write this. There are several questions that passengers ask their drivers in order to start a conversation, like, where are you from? Probably due to my heavy accent, I get asked that one the most, followed by, how long have you been driving? And then the other one is, what made you decide to work for a ride-sharing company? What would you tell them?
I would usually tell them the truth. I was broke.
Yep.
I'm financially broke. I was trying to start, you know, me and my girlfriend at the time, who's my wife now, we were talking about getting together, you know, starting a life together.
Sure.
But I have been divorced twice, so I have a lot of emotional baggage.
Sure.
I didn't want to bring financial baggage to the relationship.
See,
I wanted to clear my financials. I wanted to, like, have a clear slope of my financials. And that's one of the things that motivated me to work my ass off and try to pay off my debt, because I wanted to start fresh with her. And
well, and you did. This is what,
to do that.
This is what makes Nestor Gomez such a good guy. We're going to take a break, get some news, and we'll be back with Nestor in a few minutes. A few more minutes I have, luckily, with Nestor Gomez, whose new book, I get, you know, Nestor, the book was published last year, which really must have been frustrating for you, because you weren't making a lot of appearances or doing a lot of shows. So it must have been kind of frustrating, don't you think? Wasn't it?
In a way, yes, because I wanted to be able to, you know, to do readings and go to schools and go to libraries and read the book to audiences. But at the same time, I was hoping that we were all going through some really difficult time with COVID. I was hoping that people could get the book, deliver it to the house, and be able to take a break from everything that they were going through with COVID by reading my book. So
That's a good notion, too. How did COVID and the whole sort of lockdown affect you? If you're a storyteller, I'm sure maybe you drove your wife crazy by just telling her stories all the time. Or you have your kids over, your grown kids, and say, come on, you got to listen to my story. Because part of what you do, a great part of what you do, is not just writing and the storytelling. The audience is a huge part of what you do, is it not?
Yes, but we were lucky enough that a lot of storytelling shows, including the mod, went virtual.
Yeah.
They started to do Zoom stories. I even did my 80-minute immigration show a couple of times last year virtually on Zoom, and I was actually able to bring people from New York, from L.A.,
oh, of course,
from all different parts of the nation to do our show.
Wow. So does that give you any ideas for expanding the reach of immigration stories?
I wish that I could do the immigration story show in every state of the nation, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like, ideas, I hope for it. I have plenty. What I don't have is a lot of money and
yeah.
resources to do it. But hopefully.
Well, maybe.
We have the show in Chicago and New York, and we are planning to start it on L.A. soon. So.
See, I think it is immigration is the story, one of the stories of our time, don't you think? I mean, this is such an essential kind of story. This country has always been a country of immigrants, and the stories are incredibly, they're as varied as the accents and the looks on people's faces. You must even feel that you, when you hear someone else's story, you have your own very specific story, but you must get a great deal of joy out of most of the stories you hear from other immigrants, don't you?
Yes, I get a lot of satisfaction because when I came to this country, I didn't have a voice,
yep.
And I didn't have a platform to tell my stories. And now to be able to give a platform to other people and to help them tell the stories is one of the biggest blessings of my life.
Do you think there's another book in you? I think the format of this book, it's you know, probably about 4 inches by 5-6 inches. It's small. Stick it in your back pocket. It's only about 70-some pages. I think there's a real future in this kind of format. I think this is a great thing that people could read on a bus, in a ride-sharing thing. From those people who have seen it and read it, what's been the response?
It's been very, very good. A lot of good comments, a lot of gratitude for the book. Our idea is that actually kids in schools will look at this book, and it will be something, like you say, something that they could carry and put in the packet. If they could carry their cell phone everywhere, they could carry this book. And this is what we were hoping for, that kids will look at this book, because there's nothing more amazing for me than to be able to inspire people, to inspire a younger generation to be able to tell their own stories.
Sure.
The same way that you inspired me when you told me to keep writing, the same way that Lily B, that Archie, that my friend James Gordon, that Scott Whitehead have inspired me. I owe a lot to a lot of people here in Chicago who are amazing storytellers, who have inspired me and helped me so much, that I want to be able to inspire other people to tell the stories as well.
Wow, that's a really good aim. How many jobs are you working now?
Only one right now.
What?
Because of COVID. Yeah, only one job. Well, I do my quality control at a manufacturing plant where I work, SNC, and I do the storytelling. So.
Wow, you've been there for a long time at that FNC place, right?
Years.
And how's your marriage going?
My marriage, knock on wood, is going well. At least that's what I think, because you never know.
Yeah, we'll have to ask her. We'll have to have Melissa come on and do her own storytelling thing.
Yeah.
Nestor, just for a couple more minutes, when you look back on coming here, crossing the border illegally, and what you in your life have become, it must be amazing to you.
It's unbelievable. I have an uncle who passed away a couple of years ago. And my uncle, of course, it's my uncle, so he knows me since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And I showed him one of my videos from the morgue before he passed away, of course.
Yeah.
And he was so surprised because he was like, I cannot believe that of all the kids that I knew, that kid that used to stutter, that couldn't talk, is the one that actually became the storyteller.
Wow.
He just couldn't believe it, and I still cannot believe it sometimes. You know, I see videos and things that I do, and I'm like, how did that ever happen? How did that ever take place?
Well, it's got to be so empowering for everybody out there. Nestor, it is great to know you. I'm glad you walked up to me that day and gave me, you go, sir, I write stories. You did it like this. You go, I write stories. I go, okay, that's good. It's a hard way.
I will always be thankful to you for listening to me today. It means so much.
Nah, I just said it's a hard way to make a living. It's a hard way to make a living, but you have done. Well, it's still, you know, storytelling still a hard way to make a living, Nestor. Don't kid yourself. But I hope the immigration stuff, I hope you can get that launched. And anybody out there with a few $100,000 who wants to capture the stories of the American dream, you should get a hold of Nestor. You should really get a hold of Nestor. Best to the family. Best to your big grown kids. And I can't wait to see you again.
Thank you, and I hope that you stay healthy, and I hope that we see each other again now that COVID is finally, hopefully, behind us.
You bet.
At least for now.
You bet. Take care, Nestor. Nestor Gomez, storyteller.com is how you can find this young man and see what... Well, he's not that young anymore. I keep saying young man, but Nestor is in his 50s now. But that is young to me.